Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
Uncle Barney just texted and he said, Blankers, quit insulting princesses.
It's a fact, Uncle Barney. It's a fact.
You need to quit insulting princesses. I just walked by Andrew Carlson. We'll get to the stories that Brendan didn't let us talk about in a second. I just walked by AC.
Stop.
I was like, I go, what?
In case we missed it.
Yeah, bit, stories that Brendan wouldn't let us get to.
Yes.
I just walked by Andrew. I said, hey, Andrew. Like, you know, it's the first time I've seen him today. Hey, how's it going? Good to see you, AC. He didn't even say hello. He goes, do you know what today's the anniversary of? I go, no, what? He says, the Janet Jackson thing. Like, first thing that he wanted to tell me today is that it was
the malfunction
at NRG. First thing that he had to tell me. So that has been forged into the brain, I guess, of a very young Andrew Carlson. Ever since that,
I mean, we all remember our first
fateful night in NRG.
Remember our first.
I guess
Titanic for me.
What?
Your first?
That's the oh, Joe.
What?
He's younger than you.
It was Titanic or Gladiator. I don't remember. It's one of the two.
There were other options, but okay. That's just okay.
I was born in 92, Joel.
It doesn't matter. You had the internet.
You were born in 92. You were born in 82 or so.
When do you think the internet like really got popping? Like, when do you think, not everyone had household computers until I was like in like middle school. Like the iMac came out in what, 2004?
I had American Online early high AOL, school freshman.
Huh? Yeah.
Yes. That's the acronym for American mm-hmm. Online.
I've never heard anyone in my life say that.
That's Have you ever heard anybody call it Progress or a Stagem? You hear a lot of different things here this time around, George,
no.
Joe.
Speaking of Joes, Joe Kelly's a fake tough guy. Did you see what he had to say about the Houston Astros? He said if they were in the COVID bubble and they were in the same hotel as the Astros, that he would have hung around in the lobby waiting for the Houston Astros.
I tweeted about this and basically said, what are you going to do when you throw harder than what you weigh? Like, who are you taking out, tough guy? I mean, you look like the scrawny bully on the playground with the lip out with the Correa thing the day you did that. But let's just be truth be told. You're not taking anybody and beating their ass. So what are you going to do? Bark at them some more? Stick your lip out one more time? Just this dude. And again, let's remind everybody that has been under a rock. The dude played for the Red Sox when they cheated, but this is just this thing he can't get over.
He wasn't mad that they were stealing signs. He was mad that they talked about it.
Oh, God.
I actually see the genius behind what Joe Kelly's doing here.
Yeah, he's irrelevant.
He's staying relevant. Like, the greatest thing that Joe Kelly, like, ever did for Joe Kelly's career was sticking out his pouty face to Carlos Correa. They built, like, they painted a big mural for him in LA for doing it. Like, he knows what, it's Jake Paul. Like, he's selling himself just like Jake Paul. So I see what he's doing. I see right through it.
I like you fighting him instead of Jake Paul. You'd get more money.
No, one day I'm fighting Jake Paul. Jake Paul does not stand a chance. Float like a butterfly, sting like a JB. Paul's going down in round number three.
He just wants the cash.
You're not going to take a dive.
No, I'm
like
going to fight him
else.
Straight up. I'm probably not going to
take the fight then. Sorry.
I know exactly. He's scumbag. A fraud. Jake Paul, you're a fraud.
So is Joe Kelly.
You want to fight? Pay me $1 million.
I mean, think back to that fight.
He's
like,
a fraud.
He throws it with Correa, mm-hmm. and both benches clear.
He went straight to the
Correa's dugout. Right there, like going at him,
yeah.
And he's hiding out by the dugout. Like, you can't say you're going to fight someone when you literally had an opportunity to throw hands,
uh-huh.
and you didn't do it.
Every word that's appropriate for him is not appropriate with the FCC right now. But the dude can't hit Correa, and he can't hit, but he can hit a window in his backyard because he can't throw straight. But yet he couldn't throw a punch to save his life. It's just, aside from us, how many people know that he played for the White Sox last year?
I don't know.
I think he played for the White Sox last
year. I think
year.
All those words were FCC safe, though.
Not the ones I was thinking of.
Moving on. Yeah, but Joe George is a liar. Joe Kelly's a liar, not Joe George.
I was like, come on, guys. Like, what are we doing here?
Stetson Bennett, public intoxication in the northern part, I think, of the Metroplex, training for the draft, I guess. This is no surprise. Stetson Bennett, like, dude gets hammered. Dude likes to have a little bit of alcohol.
Is he doing his best Baker Mayfield?
Maybe so.
Didn't Baker get rung up for the same charge in the same area?
Was it the same area? Was it Dallas?
I think it was Dallas.
Yeah. Stetson Bennett, just look at him after they won the national championship game 2 years ago, and then he was going on the morning television shows, like, still hungover.
Still hammered,
like,
yeah.
This isn't a surprise, but this isn't a great look for Georgia. Like, if you want to make this a little bit serious.
Take it a step further.
The Stetson Bennett part of this, then you have, like, somebody on the staff driving a recruitment car that's not supposed to be used.
That's
going to the strip club, getting
about.
In the wreck, killing that young offensive player.
Lineman.
Not a great look for Georgia.
No, not at all. That's where my mind wandered to right away. It's like the more details that come out, the fact that you've got guys that are paid for by the university using university vehicles that weren't supposed to be used to get into trouble that ends up killing players on your squad, and then the quarterback that led you to the two national championships is out getting ripped and getting arrested. There's going to be some serious conversations that need to happen. With Kirby Smart, his staff, and his team, pretty damn quick.
Yeah, not a great look for the Bulldogs coming off the national title. DeMar Hamlin, remember, I'm old enough to remember when people thought DeMar Hamlin was still dead.
Yep.
He did a 6-minute interview with the Buffalo Bills website. I actually saw another Twitter video of him today. This is why the internet should not exist. Is because of these conspiracy theories that go around on the internet. They're saying DeMar Hamlin was dead because he was wearing a ski mask when it was cold outside. He's alive and he is well.
Yeah, thank goodness. And it's also, again, that because of the fact that everybody and anybody is now a reporter and can also put stuff out there that gets attention, you just have too many crazies out there with these bizarre, random conversations that become real. This is John Boy on steroids, right? John Boy created a doorbell under a jersey and it had a life of its own. Now, suddenly, DeMar didn't have a life of his own because they created the narrative that he died and they're just covering it up to save the NFL.
Yeah, there was a clone. There was a clone of DeMar Hamlin up in the Buffalo Bills suite. He was scared to show his face. They somehow controlled the weather to make it snowy that day. That way, the camera shot into the suite was not very good. And then all of the Buffalo Bills ran on it on top of that. They had an imposter coming into the Buffalo Bills locker room and talking to the team every single day. Yeah. That's the theory that was out there. Chandler Rome's reporting that Dusty Baker has pushed for Chad Pinder for the Houston Astros. This is interesting because if you're bringing in another player to be on your Major League Baseball team, Yuli Gurriel, like the thought of that is not going to happen. And right now, David Hensley's your 13th position player. So if the Astros bring in another position player, David Hensley starts the year in Sugar Land, and any sort of hope for Yuli Gurriel is gone.
It's not what a lot of people want.
Nope.
A lot of people are thinking with their heart and their heartstrings and the memories, like the corners of their mind. But those misty watercolor memories are never going to go away because he's always going to be a part of history. They got to move on. They got to turn the page and realize the reality is the percentages are in the favor of them moving on from Yuli regardless. But if you can make this team better with someone that's a more established Major League Baseball player that gives this team a chance to yet win again, then you do it. I mean, it's not going to change the legacy of Yuli. You're not going to be hated for the rest of your existence as an organization or questioned about a misstep. The guy was a tale of two different seasons last year, the regular season and the playoffs. He did what he had to do to get you where you needed to go. It's okay to move on.
Have you seen what's going on in the Dallas Zoo?
Yes.
All these
well, first of all, you know who I'm married to. Have I seen it? Every detail comes
I'm surprised you're going out on your way trying to help.
Yeah, you're not. That's not funny because it's always a possibility.
Dallas, I mean, it's just a short little 3-hour drive.
The fact that they thankfully found these monkeys and they were okay was good. But the same
Tamarin monkeys?
They kind of have the Yosemite Sam white mustaches.
Yeah, they do.
But who's trying to steal two monkeys?
I think it's an inside job.
Well, this is what I was going to say. As much as when Southwest Airlines had the complete and utter collapse for a day, mm-hmm. someone's head should roll there, starting with the CEO. Something's got to be going on with the Dallas zookeeper, right? Because this is like the third incident where animals have got out, were roaming neighborhoods.
Yeah.
People were able to steal monkeys. All these different things adding up. Something's going on that's really doesn't smell right. They need to make a change.
Well, it's a zoo. Why would it smell right?
I knew you were going to capitalize on that.
Clouded leopard was the first one that went missing. Then a vulture died of mysterious circumstances. And then these two Emperor Tamarin monkeys. I've somehow escaped the Dallas Zoo. This is another example.
Evidently,
Dallas needs to figure
stuff out. They're a hot commodity
out
on the black market.
Yeah, something's going on in Dallas.
Really? These are hot commodities?
The monkeys are, yes.
What about the clouded leopard?
I don't know, but that was just the leopard was just on the loose. And who the hell wants a vulture?
Well, it died.
I know.
No one's getting that vulture.
But I mean, I don't know why. Yeah, but why did it die? Was it someone trying to steal it?
Mysterious circumstances.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
They wanted something from the vulture.
Three maybe straight the beak incidents. Is worth
something, can you make some boots from a vulture?
That's what I'm wondering.
This zookeeper's got to be in hot water.
Yeah, they're on the hot seat for sure.
For sure.
It's Lovie Smith hot seat.
Just
right
stick
now
them in with the lions. I mean, that's good. Do your own punishment, right? Police yourselves. A 22-year-old basketball coach in Virginia impersonated a 13-year-old to play in a junior varsity game.
What's wrong with people?
I kind of think it's awesome.
Like, why?
I think wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't it be fun whenever you were 20? Like, Blankers loves to play pickup basketball. Wouldn't it be kind of cool to just ride up to, like, Cy Creek and play a little JV basketball game
and
see if you could drop 30?
Because every school has teachers versus students basketball.
You shouldn't be impersonating a 13-year-old.
Study hall pickup games we used to play in high school against our gym teachers.
Look, you shouldn't be impersonating a 13-year-old. Like, you shouldn't be trying to get one up on somebody else. But if you played pickup ball on your day when you're 22 years old, tell me you wouldn't want to go play in a JV game to see if you could drop 30.
Not in a JV game. I'd want to play in the varsity game.
Well, I mean, you score 3 points, grab 3 rebounds, and your night's done.
No, that's not true. But here's the question that I have. Wasn't it just a few years ago that we found out that some guy was more than a full-grown adult and was trying to play
more than
high school
a full-grown
sports?
Adult? What is more than a full-grown adult?
Wasn't there another high school player, and I want to say it was in basketball.
Juwanna Mann, I think.
That was getting recruited and thought to be one of the highly recruited, that could play college basketball, and we found out the dude was like 25, 30?
Wasn't that the pitcher in Little League Baseball a long time ago? What was that kid's name?
Oh, Danny Almonte?
Yeah, Danny Almonte. No, remember Danny Almonte?
Yeah, I do.
That was funny.
Represent New York. But in this case, I thought that there was a guy that had a very baby face.
I don't remember that one.
That was a high school basketball player, and he was getting a lot of recognition, and then they found out he was like 20-something.
It sounds right, but there also was the incident last year, the ESPN disaster. What was it? IMG Academy?
No, that was Bishop Sycamore.
They were playing.
Oh, that
Bishop
was that
Sycamore.
Fake high school.
The Bishop Sycamore, that fake high school.
That fake high school had college kids on the team.
That's right.
They never graduated, or they just said they were in high schoolers, and they got
whooped.
They got their ass beat by like 70 points.
But they were collecting checks to show up and
what
play.
What a wild story. You know what? It seems like it happened again this year. No one really talked about it, but there was another ESPN game where IMG played someone, and they beat them by 70.
Yeah.
And people like Google searched the high school they were playing, and it looked like they were in the middle of a farm. And people thought like maybe there was a chance like ESPN got scammed again.
Man, probably did. How about golfers wearing joggers? How do you feel about this?
That's
pro
fine.
Golfers wearing joggers.
I actually didn't. It became a discussion in our household, and I asked Lisa what she thought of it. I was like, this dude is wearing sweatpants. Like, I know the PGA Tour used to be really overstarched on like what players can wear and what they can't wear, but this one was a little like there was no belt because there was a draw. Lisa's like, nope, there's a drawstring. Those are definitely sweatpants. John Daly had a problem with it. Phil Mickelson had a problem with it. I mean, if this becomes his thing, they still look enough like golf pants with some of the other things that guys wear on the tour. I'm fine with it. And if he can get a sponsorship deal out of it, go for it. But boy, some of the old schoolers, the get off my lawn guys, were really not happy with it.
I'm a huge fan of joggers, so it's all good. 713-780-ESPN, in case you missed it, stories that Brendan didn't allow us to get to. Joe George wants us to be negative. Do you know who we are? Why will D'Amico Ryans fail? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Turn down for what?
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Text line Joe George wants to know if you're going to talk more than Brendan Riley.
I think he's already done.
Am I not allowed? Are they upset with me?
I can't really get a feel if they want you to talk more or if they want you to talk less. I haven't been able to get a good tell on it. Do you think he talks less or more than
I just asked
Brendan?
You that.
I feel like honestly, I think he's talking less so far. I think less so far.
Yeah, I think less so far.
We got a lot of things going on back here. Yeah. I got other responsibilities.
Blow him off. Brendan did.
It's because he was leaving.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd like you to talk more. Should Joe George talk more? 713-780-3776. King of Twitch is saying he also has a complaint. He's got a bone to pick with you, Joe George.
What?
King of Twitch has a bone to pick with you. He says, how come Dana Brown, the Astros GM, didn't get a voice guy promo on
because
the station?
I just started.
That's what I said. I actually did say that.
Yeah, that's something we're going to do more.
Joe George is huge on the Astros, so trust me. It's not a favoritism.
They're team number
it's not
one
a bias. Yeah, it's not a bias. It's just
power rankings go.
You know, gotta let him start to fill his way out a little bit.
I've been here for 7 days. It's going. We're going.
The fact that he's keeping account should scare everyone. It should scare everyone.
We're going Astros 1.
Yeah.
Cougs basketball 2.
There we go. I would flip-flop those two, but
Texans 3. No football team for college, and then the Rockets.
I'm Cougs.
Who?
Across the board. I'm Cougs. Cougs, little bit of a drop-off. Astros, significant drop-off. Texans-Rockets tie. That's my allegiance. Significant drop-off.
I love football.
Same.
And that's one thing with this hire for the Texans. I feel like my eyes have been bleeding every Sunday from 12 to 3 every time they play.
Oh, my goodness.
I just want better football.
I thought that was the Bears.
No, both.
Oh. I'm one of those guys that will watch the Texans twice.
Yeah, I am too. You know,
I used to. I had to stop.
I watch the broadcast, and then I'll watch the All 22.
I record it, and then I go back and watch it without the All 22.
I just couldn't do it anymore. They were playing such bad football. It was unbearable.
I stopped doing it the last six games.
The games didn't matter anymore, so it felt like, what's the purpose? Now that's going to be different. Like Stingley, these guys, like they should be much better with D'Amico, so there's a reason to do all that stuff.
I've thought about going back and watching the Niners play this past season, at least on the defensive side of the ball, but I don't know.
Why would you do that when you don't have the same resources to evaluate?
Scheme.
Yeah, but in order to run that scheme, you got to have the kind of guys that he had in San Francisco.
So you think he's going to be a completely opposite scheme?
No, I think he's going to try and run similar scheme traits, but I think he's also going to be realistic that he doesn't have a Bosa and a Werner and a Ward and all the guys that allowed him to do so many things because he knew he could trust man coverage with certain guys and he could trust this and trust that. Okay. Maybe eventually.
I think the scheme's going to be very similar.
I think so too, but I think it's what Joel's saying is that since there's that elite talent in San Francisco, it's harder to maybe dissect exactly what you're looking at. Yeah. Honestly, I would watch the Jets film. If Saleh is running the same defense that D'Amico's running, you know, you can see what Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams and
these guys.
Like, I think you might get more out of watching a lesser talented Jets defense.
You don't have a Quinnen Williams yet. But
yeah, Jalen Carter's coming.
Okay, maybe. But I think that, look, I think to your point, I'd watch both of them. And see how they compare, because like we said, look, it's a totally different role for him too, because we don't know how he's going to CEO. We don't know how he's going to do the head coaching
stuff.
Might
not call plays.
And that's a possibility too. But I think that to be realistic is I'd love to run. It goes back to the Pep Hamilton discussion. He'd love to run the same scheme that he's been running, but he's also going to be wise enough to realize he's not going to do something if he knows his talent on the roster currently isn't capable of executing it.
Yeah, absolutely. 713-780-ESPN. Not Santa says more Joe George, less Branham and blank. I would agree with that, especially the last part of it. 1642, yes, I enjoy Joe George being part of the show. 2920, wait, I thought blank was a get-off-my-lawn guy, low-key. Is that fair? Is that fair to call you that?
No.
I don't think that's fair.
Don't think Blakers is a get-off-my-lawn guy?
Well, I think you've been more get-off-my-lawn guy than me in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that's true. I'm definitely
get-off-my-lawn guy. Get-off-my-lawn guy traits.
My wife calls me Larry David sometimes. 8029. thoughts, Jeremy Logan. Okay, thoughts, Branham. Logan Paul is a better wrestler than boxer. I would agree with that.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He was great in the Rumble.
I want to fight Jake Paul. I want to go toe-to-toe with Jake Paul more than anything in my life. Bring it on. Jake Paul's going down, man. No doubt about it.
No finances involved. You want to go toe-to-toe with him?
Why would I have no finances involved?
I'm just saying. You just made the statement. I want to go toe-to-toe with Jake Paul. We didn't talk about this time being about money.
Why am I putting on a pay-per-view fight and doing it for free?
I'm not talking about pay-per-view. That's saying ignorant. Let's go down to Lou Savarese's gym down there by the Toyota Center and just put you guys in a ring.
I'm not fighting for free.
Okay.
You kidding me? All right. D'Amico Ryans is the new head coach of the Houston Texans. Joe George wants to bring the negativity out of the Killer Bees for whatever reason. It's been a very positive show today,
yeah,
Joe George. It's been a good Wednesday. It's been a good positive show. Largo is saying, here we go, you know, negative radio from noon to 3. We've been extremely positive all day, and then here we go.
Oh, Largo, he's the king of
223,
everything.
Joe George wants us to be negative about D'Amico Ryans and ask the question, why will D'Amico Ryans fail? 713-780-3776. If indeed D'Amico Ryans fails as a head coach, why will it happen, Blinkers?
If he fails, why? I would say if he fails, it's because they pass on a franchise quarterback, and all three of the franchise quarterbacks they pass on succeed. And in the meantime, the defense isn't doing what they wanted to do with the plan that they set in motion as to why they passed on the quarterbacks. And he inevitably gets roped in with Caserio on that.
I think that would cause...
An uproar.
Well, no, because if Will Anderson or Jalen Carter is your pick and they're good, I don't think...
But I said that they're not going
to
be...
They would have to not be good.
Yeah.
They would have to not be good. To me, it's like... But even then, like, he has a six-year contract. I don't think he's going to get fired. I think he has at least 4 years. Like, even if he's really bad, I think he's going to be here for 3-4 years. And I expect D'Amico to be good, for the record. It's going to be more than just this draft class. Like, it needs to be all of the draft classes. So, like, if D'Amico fails, it's going to be because the roster is not very good, and D'Amico doesn't really translate to a head coach like we thought. There are many times offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, they look like can't-miss head coaches, and then they take over that head coaching role, and it's not the same job, and they're not as good at it. A lot of times they are a good head coach and they just don't have the roster to win games, and then the team gets impatient and an organization moves on to the next guy. I ultimately think if D'Amico doesn't, you know, have a great tenure with the Houston Texans, it's going to be because of the roster and because the talent's not very good. So the Texans have to hit there. And part of that's on Nick Caserio, quite frankly. It's why this like alignment and partnership has to work out. Caserio is going to have to hit on draft picks. They're going to have to build a roster that D'Amico Ryans can play to their strengths and also play to his strengths. And Caserio has to know what D'Amico's strengths are and draft some players that are synonymous with his strengths. To me, it's all about the roster and the talent. I think Bill Belichick, if he was handed the Houston Texans roster the last 3 years, I don't think they win many more games than David Kelly or Lovie
Smith
did.
But I think that, look, I think this is easy to have this conversation hypothetically because realistically, there's not much D'Amico's going to do that it's going to end up bad for him because of what's happened before him, to your point, and because of all that we've had to stomach. He's going to be around for a while, and Caserio's the next to go because he's going to take the blame for everything. Even if they both were in the room, or Caserio's adamant about the fact that D'Amico helped me make this pick like O'Brien was when he roped Jack Easterby into everything. The only guy taking the blame for anything going forward, if they screw up the quarterback, screw up the draft, screw up everything else, is Caserio right now. D'Amico is the hero that we all need. And D'Amico's going to be a guy that is going to be put on a pedestal for the near future.
I think it really just comes down to if you have the quarterback. Because I think 80% of coaches in the NFL are only good because of their quarterback. Like I think there's very few. Brian Daboll seems like he's a really good coach with what he did with the Giants. Kyle Shanahan clearly is quarterback proof. But like, what about Bill Belichick? Like, what has he really done?
He won 11 games with Matt Castle, went to the playoffs with Mac Jones.
A decade ago.
Look at what Dan Campbell did.
Went to the playoffs with Mac
Look
Jones
at what
too.
Dan For Campbell sure. did with Jared Goff.
I guess I'm down on Belichick because of the disaster that he did on offense this year.
Like, that was just bad luck.
But like, look at, you know, like, is Zach Taylor a good coach?
I think he is.
Or is Joe Burrow an elite quarterback?
We don't know. Zach Taylor doesn't have any evidence of
Burrow.
With
what's wrong with it being a combo platter?
No, it definitely can be, but like, will we ever know if Bryce Young is a superstar and the Texans draft him, what will we really know about D'Amico Ryans? Like, is Robert Saleh a good coach, or is he in a bad situation because Zach Wilson's trash?
It's kind of like Billick back in with the Ravens. Like, he was an offensive coach and gets credit for all the Ravens' success when they had an unbelievable defense and he had nothing to do with the defense.
Saleh's situation is the way D'Amico can be ruled a failure, right? Because Saleh was the first to capitalize on having an all-world defensive roster and be under the Shanahan coaching tree, which is about as highly as a respected coaching tree as there is right now, and then have it translate to a head coaching job where he doesn't do well.
But I think if you get if D'Amico is Robert Saleh, I think it's a home run. He won 7 games with Zach Wilson, Mike White, and Joe Flacco. Like, he's got that defense humming in a way that, like...
But if you do go quarterback...
It changes the conversation. Yeah. If your quarterback is bad and you can still win 7 games, I think that's impressive.
713-780-ESPN. If D'Amico Ryans fails, why? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
How will D'Amico fail, if he does fail? I don't think he will. I think it's going to be good. But if there is, if he does fail, how is it going to happen? 713-780-3776. I didn't particularly like this quote from Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio was quoted as to saying, I read this quote, we know how important it is to get results now, and we have a lot of work to do. I'm excited to partner with D'Amico to build our football team together. Mm-hmm. The part that I don't love about that is get results now, because I think there's a lot of things that you can do where you try to win football games in 2023 that prevents you from winning games in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. I still believe the Houston Texans need to have a long-term approach. And I'm not saying to embrace the suck. I'm not saying to tank. I'm not saying to win two football games next year. But there are certain things that you can do next season that prevents the growth of this organization. And look, I know Nick Caserio, he might not feel like the reset button has been pushed. I believe that he should feel that way. And I think that Cal McNair needs to reassure him that the reset button has been pushed on his tenure with the Houston Texans now that D'Amico Ryans is here. Because they're giving D'Amico Ryans a runway. They're giving him six seasons. Nick Caserio needs that same runway to partner up with D'Amico Ryans. Because if Nick Caserio is truly on the hot seat and his job's on the line and he feels pressure to win next year, then he's going to use up all $40 million of cap space signing stopgap free agents, including Jimmy Garoppolo, and the Texans might go win
this
seven
is Bears
games next
2.0.
year, and then in 2 years they suck again.
This is Bears 2.0 with Nagy and Pace, where they don't care about the resource given up. They're trying to save their asses to do things that completely blow up the rebuild, and that's what's scary.
It is, but I think there has to be like goals, though, that has to be put into place. Like, if Cal McNair needs to say, look, Nick, don't overspend. Like, this job is yours. Unless, like, if Derek Stingley Jr. can't stay on the field or he's a bust and Petrie can't tackle anyone still, even though he's a good player, and, like, Damian Pierce.
What about Green?
Like, yeah, Kenyon Green, if he doesn't improve. Like, if you've clearly shown in last year's draft that he got it wrong, I think you can move on from Caserio based on that alone. But if those guys get better, then yes, give him his runway. But there has to be a standard, and you can't panic. Like, I'll be honest, I don't think Texans fans are ready for a quarterback. I don't think they're really prepared to – the way they talk about Rockets players and Astros players, I don't think they're really prepared to watch Levis, Young, or Stroud struggle.
Which rookie quarterback's going to struggle?
And I don't think people are really ready for like what it really can look like.
I don't
like.
Think the casual fan understands that even the really, really good rookie quarterbacks that end up being great are going to be great in their first year. The Ben Roethlisberger anomaly of a 15-1 season.
And even that was defense, though.
Right. It is not going to happen to the majority, if not 90%+ of the quarterbacks in their first year. I think the thing that struck me about the Caserio quote that I had to read as well until we see tomorrow and hear more was he opened it up by saying, speaking for the entire Houston Texans organization. I was like, okay, I mean, I don't think Cal had a quote previous to that. You don't have to speak for the, and plus, I don't know if that was the power play of saying I'm still in charge.
But I don't think so.
I think he should just be speaking for himself and saying how ecstatic he is that the organization has a guy in place that can do the things they want him to do and all the other things. I understand and agree with what you said as well, but I was like, you don't need to be speaking for anybody but yourself right now, because of all the people that are on solid footing, you ain't one of them.
Sure. But like, that's the, like, to Joe's point, like, I agree that the goals need to be put in place. And look, Caserio's quote that I kind of dove in on is the one where he says that we need to get results now.
Yeah.
The results really shouldn't be the wins. The results should be the evaluation of your draft picks, to Joe's point. Like, do we see progression from Derek Stingley? Okay, that's a win for Nick Caserio. Do we see Jalen Petrie look much better in year two than year one? He looked good his rookie year. Okay, that's a win for Nick Caserio. Same thing with Kenyon Green. Same thing with Damian Pierce. Same thing for this rookie class, stacking them up to other rookies that will be drafted in the 2023 NFL draft. That's how Nick Caserio should be evaluated by Cal McNair and the decision makers above Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio should not feel the pressure that they need to win 7 games next year because they need to get results now. Because winning 7 games next year is feasible. You can do that. But winning 7 games next year, I think, hamstrings you going forward. Mm-hmm. Because it's very, like, I think it's very easy to win 7 games next year with $40 million in cap space and the number 2 and number 12 pick in the NFL draft. You could, one, trade those, like, totally extreme look here and totally kind of an outlandish idea. Not that I'm suggesting it. You just trade the 2 and 12 picks for really good players right now. And then you use the $40 million to sign average players across the board. You're going to win 7 games, and then you have nothing going forward. That cannot be the results that you need right this second.
No, they can't, because for every Joe Burrow pick, you're hoping that next year there's the Jamar Chase. There's a way to continue to make this team better. Even if he goes defense, if you go with an interior defensive lineman this year, if you go with someone that's in the linebacking core next year or another stud influential player, or however, however you get your franchise quarterback, you can do so many more things, and you don't want to stunt the growth at this point of what so far, with the exception of one loss on the very last game of the season last year, kind of pressed a slight pause button in the embrace the suck mentality, you're still going to come out okay. You're going to have a little bit, one obstacle is going to cost you a little bit possibly, but you're still not too far gone from staying right on schedule. The one thing that could screw up your schedule is if your motives change, if the direction changes, if you do some of the things you were talking about, now you got real problems. And now you're thinking more from yourself in a selfish perspective. You're thinking more about yourself than you are the organization, because you're close. You're getting there. You're following the path and the plan, and things are starting to fall into place. You don't need a guy going rogue now to try and win in the short term, which screws up everything you've been trying to do long term.
Yeah, the path needs to be the same for DeMeco and Caserio. And I'm not expecting DeMeco Ryans to win 7 games in year one. Like, win 5. Win 5 and have really good young players that look very promising, that it looks like you have the building of a really good future. 2616, if DeMeco fails, what has to happen? 713-780-3776. 2616, if DeMeco fails, it'll be because of ownership and upper management in the organization. That's a valid concern. No one has tons of faith in Cool Cat Cal McNair. We hope, and the DeMeco Ryans signing, I think, kind of alleviates some of that fear. The hope is that they're turning the corner on what has been dysfunction the last few years.
And the hope is Hannah becomes more involved on a daily basis. Hannah seems to have a very level head on her shoulders. She seems to understand and have a firm hand on the pulse of not only the public, but the perception and the reality of what they need to do. And I think that you're getting some people in the room now that can have true discussions about what's in the best interest of the franchise instead of Tommy Boy interrupting video games to try and figure out what he doesn't know. And I think that's encouraging all in itself. So now it's going to be, we don't have to ask the question, did Cal even know when Bill O'Brien traded D-Hop? Now we assume that you have really smart people in a room that are capable of making the appropriate decisions for a franchise trying to turn the corner.
Lim on Twitch is saying, if DeMeco fails, it's because Caserio has gotten in the way. I think to me, that's the all-encompassing thing, is Nick Caserio derails the talent of this team, the roster building, the team building of this team. And I believe that Caserio should be given the allowance to have a decent amount of patience, a decent amount of runway. If you're committing 6 years to DeMeco Ryans, you're not expecting him to turn around this organization in a year.
Right.
It needs to be, look, best case scenario, 2024, it's a team that can be competitive in a bad division. But it has the young players, the young pillars, the young foundation of being a contender for the next 3, 5, 7 years after that. But that takes patience. And it takes hitting on draft picks.
Yeah, you have to hit on the draft picks first and foremost. You do have the money to play with, but the most impactful players this franchise, I think, is going to get in the short term is going to come out of the draft. So you've got to get those picks right. And ideally, you'd like to get a situation where at different skill position groups, you add significant franchise-changing players in the next couple of years, because you've got, like you said, multiple picks if you need to use them to move up. But more so, if you just keep doing your business the way you've been doing it, you should get a top 5 pick next year too. And whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or this is when you truly attack the quarterback or however you go about it, as long as you're strategic and you're great at talent evaluation or just good enough, you shouldn't be able to swing and completely miss where you're picking, and you should make your franchise better.
The other part of that, too, though, is that there are players that will fit DeBico. Because, look, Derek Stingley Jr., maybe he is Sauce Gardner, but whenever he's sitting back in a cover two, he looks like a fourth-round rookie. So, like, it's great to be able to evaluate what's going to be a good football player and what's not going to be a good football player. But last year, the 49ers had a safety they drafted in the fifth round that was an all-pro in his rookie year because it was a type of player that really fits DeMeco Ryan's defense. And Nick Caserio and DeMeco, I think, come from two different football philosophies. So the big, like, make or break for me when it comes to Nick Caserio is being able to evaluate which players will be good for DeMeco. Like, no square peg and round hole type of thing. Like, you have to be able as a general manager to identify, okay, this is my head coach. These are things that he's looking for. 4-3, 4-2-5 nickel defense. What's our offensive coordinator going to look like? And what players do they value? And how can we find those players to fit us? Can you find it? Like, Damian Pierce was good. Damian Pierce was very good last year for the Houston Texans. Like, can you find a running back in the fourth or fifth? Like, San Francisco is known for finding these dudes fifth, sixth round that could run for 1,000 yards. Nick Caserio has to be able to find those players to fit the offense that they want to be able to run.
I expand that thought process to say, not just for DeMeco, but DeMeco's staff, right? Because that's why I'm going to translate it to the other side of the football. I'm going to say, whoever he picks as offensive coordinator and his staff, I'm going to know that they're going to run a system to where I'm going to get players that are going to allow you to perfectly fit and run that system on a play-by-play basis. I know, like you said, John Lynch and whoever else was involved with John Lynch drafting the guys that they drafted, they have hit on a ton of picks, especially in the middle rounds, that have become significant pieces as role players to their ultimate puzzle. That's what you got to have with Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio should now be able to finally, once and for all, wipe his hands clean of having to deal with, on a week-to-week basis, the missteps of coaches. Now he needs to worry about being able to fortify the cabinet and putting enough groceries on the table so that DeMeco and his staff can put up the best meal possible, can serve the best dinner.
He should be able to do that.
Like, the fourth-round talent, though, is the fourth-round talent, right? Like, you know, like, I'm not telling Nick Caserio to find second-round players in the fourth round. But whenever you find a fourth-round player and it's a fourth-round talent that just fits DeMeco's defense or whoever his offensive coordinator is to a T, that's whenever a fourth-round player looks like a second-rounder. The safety for San Francisco, fifth-round draft pick. There's no reason that dude should be an all-pro as a rookie. Why does he? Because he's the perfect fit for DeMeco, and DeMeco can bring out the skills in that specific player that are catered to his defense. And that's what's going to be a struggle for Nick Caserio, is learning the tendencies and the desires and the wants of DeMeco Ryans to build the 53.
But he was a scout and a coach, and he should know how to be able to fill.
He did for a long time with one master.
Yeah, he did with Belichick.
With one master.
He helped. He watched Belichick do it, so in theory, he should have the tools.
He didn't with Lovey.
But see, I think I get your point, but I think it proves how much Lovey Smith was not his hire, because the second he took Derek Stingley Jr., I told everyone that he does not belong in Lovey Smith's defense.
We talked about that.
It will be a disaster. Like,
completely agree. And I think that's why they viewed Lovey as a stopgap, not as long term. Because that was the biggest tell to me, that they didn't think Lovey was going to be here for more than 2 to 3 years. If Nick Caserio is drafting a corner at number 3, when Lovey Smith goes on Barstool and tells them that cornerback is his fifth, not first, not second, not third, not fifth most important defensive position, they aren't aligned. But Nick Caserio, like, and I don't put much stock in Lovey and Nick because he didn't think that Lovey was going to be here long term, but Nick cannot be stubborn. Nick can't be like, I think that defensive end's the most important whenever you have DeMeco Ryan saying interior defensive line is the most important. So Caserio has to be adaptable and be able to work with DeMeco.
Yeah, Nick's days of running roughshod and doing whatever Nick desires as the godfather of the Houston Texans are over. But he has, in order to make sure he sees the majority of his contract through now, he's got to be a team player. He's got to be a team player that is trying to do the best things for this franchise short and long term, and his head coach and his coaching staff, and to some degree his ownership, as opposed to all the things that he was getting away with before you had all these other checkpoints and people in place that could make sure that we were staying on track. Because now you're on watch. Now you're in the crosshairs, because we already know people were calling for his job last year. And as it relates to at the end of this season. So now we know that we said, look, if we're still having these conversations a year from now, then we need to evaluate if Nick should be gone. And so he's got to be on his P's and Q's, and he's got to do what he needs to do to make sure he gives D'Amico Ryans and this organization every chance to succeed.
713-780-3776. If D'Amico fails, why? We don't think it's going to happen, but why? Also, do you think D'Amico should be calling plays, or should he be that CEO type of head coach? Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you want D'Amico Ryans calling plays? He's going to be the new head coach of the Texans. Press conference tomorrow, 3:59 for D'Amico Ryans. We know he's been the play caller for defense these last 2 years that were top five. This year they were number one in total defense. Do you want D'Amico Ryans calling plays, or do you want him to be that CEO type of coach?
Well, I mean, ideally, I'd like him to have total control and a grasp on both to where he's capable, because I think regardless of who's on his roster, I think you'll see a more creative scheme and a more modern here and now day NFL type defense run out there if he's calling plays. But if he has a guy that's been someone that he trusts that understands and runs the same kind of system so that he can focus and doesn't become a Nathaniel Hackett, then I'm okay with that too. I trust that he is in total control of the situation itself to understand who he is, what he has to do, and if he's capable of doing it all himself or he needs help. Same way with the offense, I now have to trust that he is going to get the right guy offensively to do whatever they need to do. I trust that D'Amico is going to understand, look, if I just feel like I'm getting over my head, or I've got so many other things that I need to focus on as the head coach, that it's in all of our best interest. If I get a guy that calls the plays, then I'm fine. Because we're talking about guys that were in this coaching cycle that weren't calling plays in some cases, but were highly regarded because they were taking stuff off the plate of the coach that specialized in their side of the football.
Which coach?
Like, I think Sirianni was fully capable of calling plays.
Yeah, but Steichen was calling plays.
That's right. But I think, so that's to my point. So D'Amico, if he finds a guy that's capable of calling a game the way he calls a game because he needs to focus more on the head coach, I trust D'Amico's got this.
Oh, I thought you said that there was candidates on the Texans list that were coordinators and not calling plays.
No, I'm saying if D'Amico can do, like a lot, we were talking about, you know, getting guys that fit the bill of being able to do what we need to do, right? If the question is with D'Amico, should he be calling plays? Mm-hmm. My thing is, there's plenty of guys out there that call plays or don't call plays, but still have the philosophy of the head coach.
I have a really soft stance on this, which I don't like to do. To me, I'm kind of leaving it up to D'Amico.
That's what I'm saying.
Like if D'Amico has a guy out there where he's like, that guy's just as good a play caller as I am, I'm still going to be involved in the game planning throughout the week. I'm still going to watch film on the other offense and you know, give some tidbits to the defensive coordinator on how I see things. If D'Amico's comfortable with that, okay. Like, I'm cool with that. And I like a head coach that has that CEO role anyways, because I think that it can become a little bit difficult to do at times to do both. I think whenever you're trying to call plays, whether it's on the offensive side or the defensive side, I think sometimes you can lose sight of like the holistic avenue of the game.
Remember David Culley, Bill O'Brien.
Well, Culley was never calling plays, so he shouldn't have had that excuse.
No, you're right, but I'm just saying, when a head coach screws up and you're called on the table for it, mm-hmm. it's normally the Mike McCarthys with the clock management, with the challenges, the Bill O'Briens with the same, the Culleys with the same. You're talking about Nathaniel Hackett with over and over every single week, it seemed. It was like...
An offensive play caller should never have trouble with time management, though. Like, that's never going to be fixed if you're just looking at it from a CEO perspective. Because I think offensive play calling and time management go hand in hand.
But you know when you're over your head, right? Sure, you know sure. that if, like with Hackett's specific case, he wanted to call plays. He wanted to prove that he wanted to do what he wasn't allowed to do in Green Bay when he got the notoriety to get the job that he got. Well, in trying to do that, he was also hurting and hindering his abilities as a CEO to manage the other things that were hyper important to his team's success. So then to your point, as we were discussing, D'Amico's got to be smart enough to also, and I believe he is, to be able to say, I can't do both. Like, I need to focus on what we're going to do to be the best football team we can be. In order to do that, I'm not doing everything that I can either in one way area or the other. I'm failing my defense because I'm not giving them enough time during the week, or I'm failing my team because I'm spending so much time on defense that I'm not watching clock management, game management, and things that I need to be involved in.
It's hard to say that I don't want the guy calling plays for the number one defense in the NFL to give up play calling for the Houston Texans on the side of the ball that he's his very best at. But I lean DeMeco as the CEO. And if DeMeco's this leader of men and DeMeco's really good at evaluating talent, he's good at bringing the best out of people, he should be really good at evaluating coaches too. And we've seen a couple of the names that he's requested interviews for the offensive coordinator job, for the defensive coordinator job. Looks like he's probably going to bring in guys that he knew in San Francisco as well. I think that he should have that CEO approach, like a Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, which a lot of people on the text line were mad at Joe George for not mentioning Mike Tomlin as a coach who's quarterback proof. Like, be that CEO where you're overseeing everything. If you're a leader of men, you have somebody on the offense that you've identified could be the very, very best, or at least the best of what is out there. He's going to run your offense. Yes, you have a defensive mind, and you can be very helpful throughout the week, game planning, scouting the opposing team. But on game day, your role is that you're going to oversee everything and let an offensive coordinator you trust call plays and then a defensive coordinator that you trust as well call plays.
Yeah, no, look, I think that's why they love DeMeco, and that's why I think DeMeco is going to succeed, is because as a captain, as a leader, as a coach, he has always been able to command the room, but he's also been smart enough to be able to command the best out of himself. He can control himself. He can understand where he needs help, where he doesn't, where, you know, he can kind of hand things off to people. I mean, I give Sirianni, as much as I didn't think it was going to succeed when they hired him, I give him all the credit in the world because he was able to turn things over to two coordinators that are now getting looks as head coaches because both were able to succeed no matter how much he's involved or not involved and which side of the ball he specializes in or not. I believe that he did it the right way. And DeMeco's fully capable of doing the exact same thing, I hope better. And I hope that he gets guys that he knows, guys that are just waiting for their chance, that because he's worked with them and or he's talked to people that have worked with them and know, like when we talked to Tannenbaum, when he was talking about Ben Johnson.
Yeah, we were so excited to be here.
But yeah, well, okay, but aside from that, when he did give us the tidbits that he did, one of the morsels that he put out there for us was he worked with Ben Johnson in Miami. He commanded the room. He had the respect of his players. He was able to do things and say things and practices and other things that the players would listen to. That's the kind of thing you expect out of a DeMeco Ryans. Like, he's going to get the more, and the guys he's going to bring in are going to have that same mentality and get that same respect and be able to carry out the same things, whether it's him or his guy doing it.
I think a lot of what's going to make or break DeMeco, like last segment we were talking about, if DeMeco fails, why? A lot of it's going to be the ability to evaluate not players, but coaches, especially in a day and age when the offense is so important. You're going to have to hit on those OCs. You're going to have to hit on those OCs. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Joe George for putting together all the great stuff that he put together. Not the Dana Brown imaging, though. A lot of people are very upset that there was no Dana Brown imaging. I can't believe that you didn't do that. But great job today doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. The Will House coming up next.
Football!
Talk to you tomorrow, Houston.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.